Good evening. If you haven't already done so, open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 7, and we will make an effort to finish up the Sermon on the Mount this evening, at least the things that we're going to talk about for the conclusion of our discussion. You'll give me a couple of minutes, I hope, to make a few personal comments before we finish, since it's our last session. You know, life's kind of an interesting journey, and you don't always anticipate the kind of impact that different things are going to have on your life. I grew up outside of Lubbock until I started high school. Went to a little school, farming community, so not unlike this part of the world. School was a little bigger, but it was the same kind of culture. I absolutely loved that world. And when I was 14, my folks' dad decided to go to Pasadena, Texas, and preach. And so I went from Roosevelt Junior High in the 8th grade, where I had, I don't know, 50, 60 kids in my class, to Deer Park High School to start the 9th grade, where I had about 600 kids in my class. And for a kid from West Texas, that was culture shock. And I was miserable for probably for the first year. I didn't want to move up there. Just, I played football, played baseball, played basketball. When the school's little, you know, everybody's a superstar. And had a girlfriend, had a motorcycle, had a job. Man, life was good when I was 13 years old. And then that all came to a screeching halt when I started high school. And in retrospect, it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. But you don't see that when it's happening. You know, when I came to Saratoga in 1982, because I had decided I was going to preach, and Harold said, "Why don't you come out here and spend the summer, and we'll work on some stuff together." You just have no idea how that's going to change your life. You know, a lot of young guys that decide they're going to preach, the first place they go makes all the difference. Because if they go work someplace in some little training deal and things don't go well, and people aren't kind to them, and people don't treat them good, and people don't embrace them, they kind of give up that mentality that this is what I've got to do, that maybe I'm not cut out for that. And you folks have no idea how much I owe to y'all. I don't have any way to express what kind of difference being here that summer made. And so you'll always be in my debt. I'm grateful to you. I'm always grateful to be here. Thanks to the elders for asking me to come again. Thanks for having me in your home. Thanks to Dave and Joe for having me, and Hunter for giving me his bedroom this week. For those of you that have fed me and all the nice comments, I don't like going into meetings. I'd rather be home, but I like coming here. And so I hope our studies have been profitable to you. I'm glad Zach and Whitney are here, and I'm glad that y'all are glad that they're here. And I hope that relationship prospers because things are really good, and you can tell that things are really good, and I'm glad for that. And y'all be nice to each other, okay? You know, remember he's young, and remember you're young, okay?
How can I forget?
Yeah. Well, if you forget, just give me a call. I'll remind you, okay? Okay, I could do this all night, but they only come here for that, so... Let's give our attention to this last chapter. We're not going to be able to cover everything Jesus talks about here, and I don't make any apologies for that. We haven't covered everything Jesus has talked about all week. We've just tried to hopefully kind of give an overview and make some real practical applications of some of the things that Jesus does. And I want to do that again this evening. And I guess maybe a way to start this last chapter is to go to the very end of the chapter. And I want you to notice the concluding comments that Matthew makes about Jesus' sermon. Verse 28, "So it was when Jesus had ended these sayings that the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes." And I think we read that, and we make this point all the time, all these people were impressed with how Jesus taught, not just with the miracles that he did, but with his teaching. But I think we probably don't really have a clue just how impressive that was. And I'm going to tell you, as you get into this section of Matthew, to me, that statement that Matthew makes at the end comes on the heels of what's almost shocking. Now, I've mentioned this already this week, but this part becomes very clear at the end of this lesson. You remember when he started back in chapter 5 and we made the observation at the end of the Beatitudes when Jesus says in verse 12 or verse 11, "Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake." You know, that was when we Sunday talked a little bit about Jesus' age. You know, he's a young man, and he's teaching in a culture where age and experience are still highly respected. The rich young ruler. Think of the rich young ruler and how impressed the apostles were with him. For a young man to be seen as authoritative was, I think, probably somewhat remarkable. And I think that was part of what challenged the powers that be in that day, the Pharisees and the scribes. There is a constant question about Jesus, about who he was and where he came from. If you turn over to John chapter 8, when Jesus has the discussion with the woman taken in adultery and talks about being the light of the world, the discussion that comes after that, because they realize that what Jesus is saying is bordering on blasphemy. And Jesus talks about being the light of the world and them not knowing his Father. And there becomes a discussion about where Jesus is from and who Jesus is. And I think that happens a lot in Jesus' life, because as Jesus is teaching, he's saying things in ways that a Pharisee never would. A Pharisee would never say, "You're to be blessed when you're persecuted for my name's sake." Not because of your relationship with God, not because of your faithfulness to the law, not because of your diligence and your righteousness, but because you're related to me, you're going to get persecuted. And I just have to think some of those older heads were looking at that going, "Man, this is some brash kid here." When you get to the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus concludes this with a little, I mean, some people consider this a parable. And we're going to kind of work backwards a little bit. I want you to notice that in verse 24, and this probably is the first thing everyone who is raised by Christians learns about the Sermon on the Mount. "Whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock." And if I started this right now with the little kids, buddy, they'd understand exactly what that is. So, you know, we teach our kids that very early. This is the epitome. No, we don't say this. This is the epitome of the Sermon on the Mount. Building your house on a rock. And the rain's coming down and the flood's coming up. And we don't tell our kids this is what the Sermon on the Mount's all about. But they get it. It's their first exposure to it. And in some ways, it is the pinnacle. But it's the pinnacle because Jesus says, "Whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, he's a wise man." And verse 26, "Whoever hears these sayings of mine and does not do them." Well, let me suggest to you that's what chapter 7 revolves around. Is this idea of the sayings of mine and how significant they are. And he's been building up to this, folks. If you just go back and review what we've studied, the Beatitudes. Here's the character of the citizen of the kingdom of heaven and standing right before God. And that person's going to be a light in the world. They're going to influence those around them. And they're going to have to exceed in their righteousness if they're going to even be a part of this kingdom that I'm going to be the head of, is what Jesus is essentially saying. They're going to have to exceed in their righteousness. And yet at the same time, they're going to have to watch their attitudes. That they're not doing all this to be seen of men. And that they're not caught up in this thinking that somehow or the other this kingdom is going to reward them financially. Their faith is going to have to be in God. They're not going to be laying up treasures on the earth. And then you get to chapter 7. And essentially the way he begins the chapter is by saying, when you accomplish these things, you need to be careful that you don't look down your nose at other people. Because your righteousness is exceeding the righteousness of the Pharisees. So he starts off with the do not judge. Judge not that you be not judged. Little section. And then the conclusion, and this is where I want to focus our attention, really in verse 13, even though the therefore, probably even in Dickey's Bible, the therefore is in verse 12, where he says, therefore, and this is the end of the judge not that you do not be judged section. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. This is the law and the prophets. And that kind of ties together. In many ways, all that he has said before. You remember he said, I didn't come to destroy the law and the prophets. I came to fulfill them. And so, here's kind of the bookend for that. And then verse 13 begins the conclusion. This is what the old-timers would call the altar call. Enter at the narrow gate. Wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, or straitened is the gate, some read. And difficult is the way that leads to life, and there are few who find it. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing. Inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. Listen again. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven. He who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, done many wonders in your name? Then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I liken him to a man who built his house on a rock. The rain descended, the flood came, the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on a rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them, be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew, beat on the house, and it fell, and great was its fall. I'm going to start a little backwards, and I want you again to appreciate this parable. You know, we understand that none of this chapter really is terribly challenging, so this is just going to kind of be reminder stuff. The parable describing judgment, folks. Now I recognize the building of the house probably represents the idea of our life, and the rains and the floods and the winds represent the storms of life, and that's all fairly straightforward. What I want you to appreciate, though, is that the way Jesus concludes this is by saying judgment is coming, and judgment's all going to be based on what you do with what I say. I mean, can you imagine that? I want you to think about that for a minute. It would be tantamount to Zach standing up at his age and telling everybody in the audience, if you don't do what I tell you, I'm going to judge you. And your life's going to be miserable. Your life's going to fall apart. You're not going to stand in the day of judgment. You're not going to be a part of the kingdom of heaven if you don't do what I say. What would you think about a young man that did that? And I don't think that translates to us. Part of the reason that they are so astonished at his teaching is because that's what he's doing. But what I want you to see is the Sermon on the Mount culminates in a call to consider judgment. Are you being wise in your life? Are you building your house on a rock? And this is a theme that Jesus has been offering throughout the sermon. Look as you back up from verse 25 and 26 and the falling of the house. Verse 22 and 23, many will say to me, in that day. Well, what day are we talking about? Well, clearly it's a judgment day. I will say, depart from me. I never knew you. Back to verse 19, every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Well, that's a common image. Those people understood what he meant by that. You back up to verse 13. Enter by the narrow gate. Wide is the gate. Broad is the way that leads to destruction. Narrow is the gate. Difficult is the way that leads to life. As he gets to the end, more and more what comes to the front is judgment's coming. Even though he said it throughout. He said it back in chapter 6 in verses 19 and 20. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on the earth. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And you back up into the section before that. The scribes and the Pharisees, they're doing things to be seen by men. They have their reward. Do these things this way, and your Father who rewards will reward you. And all the way back into chapter 5, the Beatitudes. These will be the sons of God. These are the ones that will inherit the kingdom. These are the ones that will look upon the face of God. And what we don't see, I think, as you study through this, is everything about what Jesus has to say is the basis upon which we're going to be judged. And it becomes very clear when he gets to the end. So the real question is, and if I was really smart on the last night of a meeting, I would end right here by saying, what are you going to do with all this material? Because that's what Jesus is saying. What are you going to do with everything I've just taught you? But I can't do that, so let me make a couple of observations in this last section. And again, this is the challenge. And this is, if you don't get anything else tonight, I would ask you to get this. Look at the Sermon on the Mount, read it, study it regularly. It is the charter of the kingdom, and it does challenge us with the people that we are supposed to be, and it is the basis upon which we are going to be judged. So with that thought in mind, go back to verse 13 and 14, and let's just make a couple of quick notes. First thing I want you to see as you consider that I'm going to be judged based upon this stuff is that Jesus reminds us that this is the only way to life. And honestly, if you'll let me say it this way, I hesitate to do so, but Church of Christ folks, New Testament Christians, we used to preach this pretty regularly. And if we don't preach it, and this is for you, if we don't preach this as regularly as we should, then we're doing a terrible injustice and disservice to this world. You know, we used to be criticized all the time. You guys think y'all are the only ones going to heaven. Well, that is a misrepresentation of what the New Testament teaches. But what the New Testament does teach is there is only one way to go to heaven. And Jesus, everywhere he went, he said this: enter by the narrow gate, wide is the gate, broad's the way that leads to destruction. There are many who go in. Narrow is the gate, difficult is the way that leads to life, and there are few who find it. And I recognize that a lot of our friends, a lot of the people that we work with, that we go to school with, that we drink coffee with, schoolmates, some of you guys, y'all go down to the fishbowl, what, nearly every week? Where's James Clinton? Because I see it on Facebook. Y'all go to the fishbowl all the time, meet with the old high school class, don't you? Okay? You know, those folks are looking at salvation different than the way we're looking at salvation. A lot of those folks buy into the idea that, there's lots of ways to get to heaven. You know, as long as you're honest and sincere, you know, you can't pass judgment on someone else. You can't tell them that they're wrong. What Jesus says in verses 13 and 14 does not play well in our society's view of toleration and ecumenicalism and relativism and subjectivism, because everybody wants to feel good about themselves based upon whatever they're doing without any outside standard. Don't tell me I'm wrong. Don't make me feel bad about myself. I can be whatever I want to be, and God loves me. Yeah, God loves you. God loved the children of Israel. But when the children of Israel were disobedient to God in regards to God's way, God judged them. And, you know, folks, that's something we need to be preaching again. It's something we need to be willing to stand up and say to our friends. And I realize what that's going to do. That's going to bring conflict, and it's going to bring criticism, and all of a sudden people are going to march out that old argument. Well, you think you're the only one who's going to go to heaven. You know what I tell them? I have no idea who's going to go to heaven. And I'm not absolutely positive I'm going. I think I am. But it's not because somehow or the other I'm better than you. And that's beside the point. The point is, Jesus says there is a big old broad way that leads to life and destruction. There's a lot of folks on it, and there is a very difficult to traverse, very narrow way that goes to heaven, and there's going to be a few people in it. In fact, Now, turn, if you would, over to Luke chapter 13. You know, Jesus says this same thing in a completely different context in Luke chapter 13. And if you look at verse 22 and 23, says, as he went through the cities and villages teaching and journeying towards Jerusalem. I think, if I remember correctly, and you kind of have to piece some things together, that Jesus, when he's making this trip, is probably over on the east side of the Jordan River, going through what they would have called Perea, which he didn't travel over there a whole lot. Most of the time, Jesus went through Samaria, which was a lot of the Jews wouldn't do. But Jesus, we really only know of one significant trip that he took through Perea, and it was on his way to Jerusalem right before he was to be crucified. He was in the last months of his ministry. And somebody asked him, the reason I mention that in verse 22 is, verse 23 says, one said to him, Lord, are there few who are saved? I think that's significant because if Jesus is teaching the Sermon on the Mount regularly, then most people in Galilee knew that Jesus taught that there's a very narrow, defined way to get to heaven. The fact that somebody's asking him probably says they haven't heard all this teaching. And I want you to notice how Jesus responds. The question is, are there few who are saved? And Jesus' answer is, strive to enter through the narrow gate, for many, I say to you, will seek to enter and will not be able. So what's Jesus' answer? Are there few who are saved? Is he saying yes or no? He's saying yes. That's curiosity to me. It makes you a little nervous, to be honest with you. Jesus tells this guy straight up, yeah, there's not going to be very many people that are going to be saved. Now, I don't know how you measure proportions. It's probably dangerous to think, okay, well, does that mean, you know, we got 100 people here? There's only going to be a couple of us that are going to make it. I don't think that's the way you're supposed to look at that. But the reality is, when you measure mankind generally and you measure those who think of themselves as faithful to God, what Jesus is saying is, yeah, this is not just going to be some easy path. And what he says to the man is, you need to strive to enter in. And the word strive is a word that's rooted in the Greek word for agony. In fact, that's where we get our word agony. And it means to struggle. Now, at this point, if you go back to Matthew 7 and you realize what Jesus is saying is the way is straight and difficult, there's only going to be a few, it's real easy for us to look out there and go, well, I'm worried about all my denominational friends. And we need to be. But I tell you, folks, the first application is we need to make sure that we're on it. Okay? Before you condemn everybody else, and there comes a point where I think you have to say, look, if you're not following Jesus' word very carefully, then you're not on the straight and the narrow way. We've got to be willing to say that. But we have to make sure that we are the ones that are applying it to ourselves first. And the application here is, am I doing everything he's been telling me in the Sermon on the Mount? Because that's the straight and narrow way that he's talking about. So you can't dismiss the Beatitudes and say, well, I'm not naturally a very merciful person. Well, you better start getting there. Because if you're not getting there, and if your righteousness is not exceeding the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, and if your attitude is not what it ought to be about whether people recognize you for your religion, and if you are laying up treasures on the earth, and you don't worry about stuff, and you're not seeking the kingdom of heaven first, then you better be careful about whether you're in the straight way or not. And that's where we need to start with this. And I'm not sure that we often see it that way. But that's what Jesus is saying. Don't take it out of its context. So that's observation number one. There's a very straight way. There's a very difficult way. There's only one way. We need to teach this to other people. We need to make sure we emphasize it to ourselves. And we need to make sure that we recognize exactly what that way is that Jesus is talking about in this context. Observation number two. You get to verse 15, and Jesus immediately says, beware. Okay, what he's just said is there's a straight way, there's a difficult way, it's the only way. There's not going to be a lot of people. The majority of people are not going to be disciplined enough. They're not going to want it. It's not going to appeal to them. They're not going to do what I'm telling you to do. And they're gonna go to destruction. And there's only going to be a few people on this way. And here's the danger that you're going to face. There are going to be people trying to knock you out of it. Beware of false prophets. That there are going to be people who pervert these sayings of mine. And that's what Jesus is addressing here. These are the sayings of mine. This is the house built upon a rock. This is the straight and narrow way. And you better be careful. You know, I grew up, most of you, because I would say most people here are probably my age or older, at least half, okay? Well, we grew up in an age where, you know, it was pretty much pounded into our heads. We got to be careful about false teaching. And I tell you, one of the dangers that I see happening in the age that we live in now is the toleration mantra that says, I have to accept you. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a homosexual or a transsexual or a transvestite or an alien dressed as a transsexual, homosexual, transvestite. Doesn't really matter what you are and what you believe and how you act. I've got to be accepting of you, and I can't pass judgment upon you, and I certainly can't tell you that you're wrong and that you're going to lose your soul. Now, man, society just tells us we can't do that. You kids, y'all got to grow up dealing with this. And it has changed dramatically the way we look at things. I know because my children's attitudes about things are different than mine. You know, they know, and we'll tell you very quickly that, just take the illustration I just used, they'll tell you very quickly homosexuality is wrong and it's sinful. But their attitudes about it are not the same as mine. Now, I can't tell you mine was always stellar because I have no toleration for it. My concern is they have too much toleration of it. Not that they think it's okay, but there's more of a live and let live mentality. Well, I'm going to tell you, folks, if folks are going to lose their soul because of sexual immorality, whether it's homosexuality or adultery or promiscuity or everything else that's going on, it's not just homosexuality. If folks are going to lose their soul for that, then some of us need to be willing to be the ones to stand up and say, Bible says that's wrong. And some of the false teaching that we're dealing with in our day and age is this mindset. It's not somebody coming into the Saratoga Church building and standing up in tan breeches with a Texas tie and saying, hey, we need to not be judgmental. That's not where the false teaching is coming from. False teaching is coming from the media and the culture and what the religious and entertainment and athletic leaders of our day, what they say and how they influence. I mean, you know, if Bono gets up and makes some statement, it's all over the headlines as if somehow or the other he's got greater insight than anybody else. You kids have no idea who that is, do you? Who? Man, I can't even think. I don't even know any new stars. Isn't that wonderful? But that's where the false teaching is coming from. And it's still coming from pulpits all over. And Jesus says, you need to watch out for this stuff. They're going to come in sheep's clothing. And what that means is, they're not going to be easily identified. Now, I'm going to ask you something. Do you think you could very easily identify somebody who's teaching false doctrine? Shake your head yes if you think you could easily identify someone. Be honest. I'm not trying to embarrass anybody. Come on. I know the answer is this, so just go ahead and do that. All right? I mean, we think we've got that down. But I want you to recognize what Jesus is saying here. What he's saying is it's not going to be easily identified. They're going to look like sheep. They're probably going to smell like a sheep. And they're going to act like a sheep. They're not a sheep, but they're gonna sneak in if you're not careful. And I tell you, you know, Tracy gives me a hard time about being paranoid about pretty much everything. Some paranoia is justified, folks, because we've got a world out there, and Satan is not stupid, and he's using every means at his disposal to try to teach us different concepts and different principles than what Jesus is teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. And I'm not saying we need to be ugly, unkind. He's already addressed the character we're to have. We're to be peacemakers. We're to be most merciful. We're to be pure in heart. We're to hunger and thirst after righteousness. We're to be meek. But we still stand up against evil, and we still have to recognize that there's false teachers out there. And the way you're going to recognize them is not as easy as we'd like for it to be. What he says in verse 16 is, you'll know them by their fruits. And he says it again in verse 20, you, by their fruits you will know them. And I tell you what strikes me about that. It takes a while for fruit to come, doesn't it? If you're using the image of a tree and a seed, I mean, there's seasons. We're standing out in front of Dan McJunkin's house cooking fish the other day, and I guess it was Danny. What kind of bush were you out there looking at, talking about that it hadn't bloomed yet?
Camellia.
Yeah, there's a camellia out there. He said, it's late. It hadn't bloomed yet. Well, we recognize that there's a season for things. Okay, the season for fruit in a tree is a long time after it's planted, isn't it? And I look at this, and what kind of strikes me about that is when he says, by their fruits you will know them, there is some degree in which that's not going to be immediate. You're going to have to wait and see what kind of fruit is born sometimes in order to recognize what kind of person you're dealing with. And that gives me pause. What that says to me is, this is not as easy as we'd like for it to be. Does that make sense to you? And so, we need to take some time and look at someone's character. You get up, they may preach two or three good sermons if they're a preacher. They may preach a half dozen. They may preach a half a year's worth of good stuff. And you don't see because the fruit hasn't been born out yet. So you got to watch them. You got to watch their character. Do they practice what they preach? That's the point that Paul makes to the Galatians in Galatians chapter 6 when he talks about sowing and reaping. The point he's making there has to do with whether or not they really are the people they're supposed to be. They're fighting, they're fussing. You got people that are teaching different things and it's causing conflict in the church. And at the end, Paul talks about the fact, do not be deceived. God's not mocked. Whatever a man sows, he's going to reap. And so you kind of got to look in the same context. The works of the flesh are evident. Adultery, fornication, uncleanness, licentiousness. Okay, if somebody's teaching but they're living that life, then that says something about them. Their fruits are not the fruits of what they're teaching. And that's fairly obvious, but look at the rest of them. Idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies. You may have a lot of people who have really good knowledge of the Scriptures and they teach a lot of stuff that's really convincing. But if they're that kind of person, their fruit is telling you that you better be careful. And sometimes it's not just their character, but it is the impact of their teaching. Paul warns Timothy over and over and over about the results of people who focus on the wrong things. There's useless wranglings, there's dissensions, there's strife, there is no sincere fruit, they're not helping people be more godly. And I tell you, we need to pay some attention to that. I've seen it in my lifetime, you've seen it in your lifetime. If all the local preacher's doing is screaming and hollering about someone and telling you how ungodly some other brother is, and causing dissension and strife and conflict and wrangling, you better pay careful attention to what's coming next. Because what preaching is to do is to help us be godly. And if it doesn't help us to be godly, it doesn't matter how stand up straight we think we are. We better start paying attention to what Jesus says about false teaching. By their fruits, he says, you shall know them. And so that's the second thing that I think is important. Jesus, here are these teachings of mine. This is the way. This is straight and narrow way. This is the building the house on the rock. And there's going to be people that are going to pervert it. And we better be on guard. And I don't mean the elders and Zach need to be the ones being on guard. Every one of us need to be on guard. You're raising a family, you better be on guard for the sake of your children. You better be on guard for the sake of your spouse. You better be on guard for the sake of your own soul. Number three, the next thing he says after the false teachers is beginning of verse 21, and this grows out of that. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom. And the point I would make about this is not all the work that people do in the name of Jesus Christ is lawful work. Remember, he's underscoring these teachings of mine. And what he says is, some people are going to come and say, Lord, haven't we taught, prophesied in your name? And haven't we cast out demons in your name? Haven't we done many wonders in your name? There's been a lot of activity in our lives in your name. And we deal with this a lot. In fact, let me tell you what's curious about this to me. You know, Jesus was living in a day and age where there were God allowed powers upon the earth that were beyond the norm. I mean, he allowed demon possession. He allowed Satan some measure of power that he doesn't allow him now. And you see that in the Old Testament. The first time you're really exposed to it is when Moses and Aaron go to release the children of Israel. Remember when they go to Pharaoh and say, let my people go? And Pharaoh says, basically, why should I believe God? Moses throws his rod down and becomes a serpent. You remember what happens next? Pharaoh's magicians do the same thing. And there's three or four miracles that Moses does that Pharaoh's magicians duplicated. I don't know if that was real power or if it was trickery. I'm not willing to do away with the possibility that it was real power. So call me a heretic if you want to. Eventually, God showed his power to be superior. But here's the reason that I mention that. It is that even when God allows some measure of activity to Satan, God's word and God's will and God's strength and God's power and God's authority always prevails. And so when Jesus is saying, many are going to say, we've prophesied, we cast out demons, we've done wonders, don't dismiss the idea that some of that could have really happened. And the point is, so what? You know, we have a lot of denominational friends. They think, oh, well, you know, we speak in tongues. God's got to be with us. You know what Jesus would say to that? There's a lot of people done a lot of things in my name who are not doing my will. And that's the point I want you to get, is that religious claims are absolutely meaningless unless we're practicing what is lawful. And that's the point he makes in verse 23. I'll declare to you, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. We have to emphasize. I know this is basic stuff, and I know you know it, and you probably think, wow, this really wasn't worth my time. It better be worth your time, folks. Because we have to be the people who stand up and say, this is what God says, and this is what I'm going to do. And I don't care what kind of miracle you think you can produce. I don't care what kind of tongues you think you can speak in. I don't care how convinced you are about all these things that are going on. If what you're doing is not to be found right here, Jesus dealt with that. Many will say to me in that day, we did all this stuff in your name, and what I'm going to say to you is, but you weren't doing what I told you to do. And I'm going to tell you, that needs to be the answer that we're willing to give sometimes. Because there's a lot of people that are convinced that, you know, their local pastor, God's speaking to them because he can do things that they can't explain. I may not be able to explain them either. But if it's not jihad with what God says, the man's a false teacher. And we need to be willing to say that. And that brings us to where we started, and that is the conclusion, where Jesus goes back to the whoever hears the sayings of mine. And here's what I want to leave you with, folks. A wise man obeys God. Okay? A wise man hears all this stuff and doesn't walk out the door and say, wasn't that a good gospel meeting? And I enjoyed that. Whoever it is, if it's me, if it's Zach, whoever the preacher is, you know what? I can listen to them and they get us out on time and, you know, whatever the deal is that you like so much. We have absolutely wasted our time this week if we don't all walk out of here and take the things that we've studied and do them. And that's the way Jesus finishes this. This is his challenge to these people that are listening. This young man who keeps talking about the fact that you're going to have to pay attention to what I'm telling you, and you're going to be judged on what I'm telling you, and the way that I'm telling you is the only way, and it's difficult, and your righteousness is going to have to exceed everybody else's, and you're going to have to give your heart to God, and you're going to have to take upon all these qualities if you even want to be in the kingdom. Now, go do what I told you to do. It it's not hard for me to envision the reaction of people. And the gospel writers tell us, you know, sometimes the people are astonished at Jesus, astonished at the things that he does, astonished at the things that he says. And the Pharisees, some of them are like Nicodemus. They're honest enough to say, we know you're a teacher come from God. Nobody can do what you're doing if God's not with them. But what's all this stuff about being born again? He doesn't understand. Some of them are intrigued and challenged. Some of them are put off by what Jesus says because they recognize that they stand condemned by his teaching. Some people are thrilled because finally somebody's telling us the kind of life we're supposed to lead and not holding us to standards that we'll never be able to keep. And like the Pharisees, you think of all these poor people and people that with sicknesses and people that are struggling with life, and man, they just poured to hear Jesus because it was hard for them too, but at least it was showing that God cares about me and God loves me and God can exercise mercy on me, and I'm going to have to pick it up, but I've got some hope in my life finally. It's easy to see why people reacted in all these different ways to the Lord. But the bottom line, for those people and for us, is that someday in some way, you and I are going to stand in front of this being that said these words. And he's going to review us. I don't know how all that's going to happen. He knows the secret things. He knows what I struggle with and what you struggle with. And he knows whether we're trying to work on it and we're trying to get better and we're contrite when we mess up. Or he knows whether we're stubborn. He knows whether you're here sincerely tonight or not. He's going to know all that stuff. And he's going to know whether you took what you studied while you're here and tried to follow him. And he's either going to judge us as very wise men who built a life on a solid foundation that withstood not just the trials of life, but withstood eternal judgment. Or whether we're just a bunch of fools who knew better and then went off, built a shoddy old building on a foundation that never stood up anyway. And if that's not sobering, folks, to you, I don't know what's going to be. Whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them. So let's go do it, okay? Thanks for your attention, not only tonight, but all week. Hope these things have been helpful. Hope we'll all go off and try to be better servants of God because of our studies. If you need to fix something in your life, you need to obey the gospel, if we can help you, we invite your response while we stand.